This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And this half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper someone who can be a big help to all of you writers out there. Her company, called JKS Communication, is a premier company in the field of promoting books. So I'm so happy to welcome Julie Shirky. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Patsy with the Z. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is a thrill for me to have you because I have been so impressed with your company. I don't know if you realize that it was one of your employees, Chelsea Apple. I love her name. she sent me the most delightful letter asking me to promote one of your writers. And what caught my attention was that Chelsea was so enthusiastic, so over the top with enthusiasm that I thought, well, wow, this is really special. So I had to, of course, get in contact with her, and then I started investigating your company. And JKS, I assume, is the S for you, Shirky?
Yeah, the whole thing is my initial.
Oh, the whole thing. So JK and S, yeah, the whole thing. So you started this company. And I want to say that, you know, there are a lot of companies out there that offer and, you know, to promote books, but you are a full-service company with offices in all the important locations. I know you're centered in Nashville, but you have offices in New York and Chicago. And just from my investigation into you and talking to people, I discovered that you have such a fine reputation.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I've got my initials on the company, but I'll tell you, the superstars are our authors who work hard, and then our team. Chelsea is amazing. Everybody on our team is so, so enthusiastic. And that's the way that I want it. If somebody's not happy doing what they're doing and they don't feel like authors are their rock stars, then this is probably not the right place for them.
Well, what I like also is that you are very open about what you do. So often, these companies try to sort of suck an author in, especially, you know, indie authors who have just come out with their first book or second book, and they're really trying to make a name for themselves. And it is hard to just weed through all of the offers that you get. What I like about your website is that you are clear. You have, you know, clear-cut directions for authors. You tell them exactly the services that you provide. And I think that's so important.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, we've been doing it for so long now that we started the company 17 years ago, and then 12 years ago, we started out as a general PR firm, and then we narrowed the focus in 2005 to just authors and publishers and books. And we started to realize in later years that sometimes there were predatory companies that came along. And so when I'm asked to speak at different conferences, I always ask if I can talk about predatory practices within our industry, not just publicity, but across the board, because it's so hard for first-time indie published authors to not have something go wrong, and they don't realize it till it's over.
Well, I have just I just celebrated the second anniversary of Joy on Paper. And since I started, I've had the great pleasure of talking to many, many best-selling authors. And, of course, they're handled by companies like you and other big publishing publicity companies. But I have also had some sad, sad stories of local authors who have come into the studio and they have told me about some of the scams that have been run on them. And it is, I even had one man, a very elderly gentleman, who spent something like $8,000. And that's why I'm really careful about ever recommending anybody. And so why I like your company is that you're straightforward. You talk directly about what services you will provide. People don't have to sort of guess at what you're going to do. And you don't hold out the hope that an author is going to be on the New York Times best-selling list just by coming to you.
No, that's so true. And there are times when people will come to us and say that they really want publicity, but as I start talking to them, I realize that financially it's too big a risk for them because there are no guarantees. And so if that's the case, I will actually decline working with people if I think that they're going to borrow money, if they're going to stretch too far, because sometimes even when you do publicity, our authors that have 7 and 8 books out now, they're doing great. But when you first start, you don't necessarily make the money back right away. And it's so hard for people to understand that. But we do try to be as transparent as we can. And with more than 2,000 books every single day of the year, 365 days a year, coming out just in the United States, people have to understand that this is an uphill battle. This is like saying, you know, I want to play baseball. At what level? Do you want to be college level? Do you want to, you know, the people in the major leagues that you know their names, there are not that many of them compared to all the people in the country that play baseball.
And I have explained to authors, I often get authors who say, well, I finished my book, it's ready to go, and, you know, and they start already thinking about sales, and they don't understand that writing a book is also a business. You do have to put a lot into it, and there are costs involved. You know, if you want to promote your book, but the costs have to be, as you said, if a book is not of interest, that one could really see it, you know, selling into a thousands of copies, then the author shouldn't, you know, waste their money. But if they have a really good book, and I have some wonderful authors who have great books, I have some that I think are just as good as any best-selling author, but they don't know how to go about it. They don't know how to make that step into promoting themselves. So what's the first step that an author should do?
Well, I think the first thing that I always tell people, and it sounds crazy, well, there are two first things. One is be nice to everybody no matter what. Because you never know who is going to make a huge difference in your life. And we're in an industry where a lot of times the most successful people are also the most generous people. And so I always encourage authors, even though it's a lonely thing at times and it's strenuous and they can feel strained, just try to be nice to everybody. And the other thing is just getting as many copies of their book and putting it in the hands of people that they think may talk about it in a grand way. That doesn't mean that you buy your own books and you hand it to your friends and family. They're the ones you want to buy them to start with. but you want, you know, it's not, sometimes authors will say, I don't want to give a book away because that's a lost sale. And I try to explain that it's not a lost sale because it could garner many, many more sales if the person is enthusiastic. And the other thing, too, is I've got some amazing stories of serendipity where we've had authors, we never take a book unless we think it's got a shot of going, but we still can never be sure. Yesterday, I was having coffee with the head of Southern Festival of Books, and Serenity Gurman, and she was talking about how, you know, she can love two books and one goes and one doesn't. And In the old days, you used to be able to sit at home as an author, write your book, put it out there, and it would take off. But today, you have to sort of, as you said exactly, Patsy, be small business owner for your book. And also, I say, be a politician and go out and kiss babies. Because it's a hard road, and it's a tough road, but our most successful authors, we've represented over 600 authors, and our most successful ones are the ones who do get out there And if there are two people who are willing to talk to them about their book, they do it. And so I don't know if we've got time for a very brief story about serendipity, but I try to tell our authors, would I have about a minute to?
You have 10 minutes.
thank you. Okay. Well, there was an author that was on a book tour, and he, sometimes 25 people would show up. Sometimes 50 people would show up at his book signings, which is very unusual. You know, unless you're well known or you've got some hook, you can't expect a lot of people to show up at your book signings. But this was several years ago, and he rolled into a town, and there was a thunderstorm, so only two people showed up to the book signing. But he still was, you know, his own showman self, a showman, and brought all the enthusiasm that he would have had it been a crowd. And then he left, and he didn't think about it. He didn't think about that. And then he got a call later that the person standing behind the counter that night in the bookstore was really taken by him and his book. And the next day, a customer came in and said, "Hey, do you have any good books?" And he said, "Yeah, this guy was in last night. Let me give you his book." So he sold the guy the book. Well, the customer happened to be the head of the Pulitzer Committee. He loved the book, and the book ended up becoming a Pulitzer Prize-winning book.
Oh, wow. Oh.
And so, but you just never know when these things will happen. And so that's why you always have to be nice, and you always have to be willing to go out and make that effort. Our authors, you know, there's the old saying that that the difference between a writer and an author is that the author never gives up.
Exactly. I was talking, as a matter of fact, I went to one of these book fests for romance authors, and I met an author there, and she said that the best thing that ever happened to her was a selfie she took with one of the fans who came, and she had actually, this author had thought maybe she shouldn't even, you know, do this book fair. She didn't have that much money, and she was really taking a chance to take the cheapest table. And she took the table, and this woman came along and did a selfie with her. And lo and behold, this woman happened to be in the military. And so she sent it to this selfie. She sent the selfie, you know, on Instagram and to all of her friends. And next thing she knows, it's rolling around to all of the troops in Afghanistan and Iraq and every place. And she's getting sales and, you know, emails from people who have read it. And it happened like in 6 weeks.
That's amazing.
6 weeks. She was selling books like she couldn't believe it. But it was that one selfie and being really cheerful and smiling, you know, really big. And that's what it takes. And I tell writers that, you know, exactly what you said. You want to be an author, you have to make that effort. And why I like your webpage is that you explain, you have these questions, you answer the questions that are most asked. Of course, one of the things, you don't take a book unless it's ready to go. It has to be edited, right?
Yes. In fact, yesterday I had a really challenging and really sad conversation with a man who was an attorney that was retired. And he has a great story, but it needs developmental editing, and he needs a new book cover. And he just couldn't see through to that. And he said, "But I will pay you." And I said, "But it doesn't matter. You have to have the best product. And if you have money to spend on publicity but not editing, then take that money and spend it on editing and a book cover." Because we represent authors that are indie published if we think that they have a shot just like a traditionally published book. And we want them to have the same industry standard professionalism. And so we do insist on that. And if they decide that they don't want to do that, we decline working with them. But we have an author that has come back to us a second time, and his first book was good, but the cover wasn't fantastic. We got a new cover designer for him. We got a new interior done, and it just popped. I mean, it came in the mail yesterday, and I held the advanced reader copy in my hand, and I sort of got tears on my eyes thinking about how this man had been, had really trusted us, this client of ours had really trusted us to try to help him get to the next level. And this was an amazing example of, he went from very mid-list indie to, his book could be on the shelf next to Lee Child's and you wouldn't know which one was self-published and which one was traditionally published.
Well, I think that's what's important about your company, that you do have this background and you do have this network of people who have been in the industry for a long time. So they have that professional eye and they can judge when something, you know, when a cover pops or when a book is good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. We really try. We try to be transparent. We try to be honest. We try to help authors, because it's a lot of times really people who have been really successful in another industry decide when they're older that they want to write their first book, and they've got the time, they've got the resources, but they forget that, well, they may run a $500 million hedge fund, but they worked up to that, and they're not going to walk on stage as a best-selling author. You know, everybody has to put in their dues. And I always love it when I get a book that just reads like butter. And I got one, I was staying, one of our authors won a literary award in Hollywood a few years ago, and I was staying at an Airbnb, and it turns out that the people owning the Airbnb were authors. And so we got to talking. Well, one of them has a book that's coming out now. The wife does, and she sent it to me, and I just didn't want to let go of it. And everywhere that I went, I carried this book with me. She said, "Can you help me with this? I remember that we talked." And people kept wanting to take the book away from me and read it themselves because it looks so amazing. It's called Coming of Age, Margaret Mead's Sexual Awakening. And it's just so beautifully written. So they're just, you know, when you get a beautifully written book, it's like just looking at the most amazing piece of artwork.
Well, you know, I love when authors are ready to take that next step and to really get out there and promote their books, because that's, you have to have, as I explained to authors, you need to have a business plan. And I've met some very successful, particularly in the romance field. These women really network together. They help promote each other's books, and they come out with business plans. Now, in your case, when you take an author on, and what are some of the things, I know that, you know, once you're happy with the cover, and you help authors with their web page?
Yes. So if an author can choose to use their own web designer, we've got a web designer in-house that does just author websites, and we can do a website for them. We work with them on what the content should be. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a really fancy website. It just needs to have several components. It needs to have the picture of the author, the picture of the cover of the book. It needs a home page, a contact page, about the book and about the author. And really, if you have those pieces and components, then you're good to go. You know, you can always add things later. It's always good to have a section that says if you're going to be going on tour or you're going to be hitting events, you know, where people can find you and where you'll be going in the future. But we do the website, and then we do come up with a plan for them. And we like to start working with authors 4 months before the book comes out, because that's, you know, you have the trade publications like Publishers Weekly and Kirkus and Forward that want to be able to read a physical copy of the book. They won't take a PDF, or, you know, you can't email them a book. It's got to be a physical manuscript or galley or advanced reader copy. And then they'll post the review about the same time that your book comes out. And you just want to be able to build up some enthusiasm for when your book comes out, because with 2,000 books, more than 2,000 books a day coming out in the United States on average, then you want the best shot at being the new news. And another thing that sometimes our authors have to learn, or, you know, all authors have to learn, is that it's not necessarily, we need a pub date so for indie authors, just like traditional authors, so that we can be saying to the media, this is coming, not that it's already here. But also, them just having a book is not the news. We have to find the hook for them. And the thing about having an outside publicist or you know, one that's either, you know, from your publishing house or if you're an indie published author, there are things that you would sound insane saying about your own book and yourself. I mean, it would sound crazy, but other people can say it. Like we can say, we get excited about our books. Like you said, Chelsea wrote to you and told you, you know, how enthusiastic she was. But if the author had written and said, I have just written the best book ever, I mean, that would just sound insane. And so, although I do get that sometimes, but you want somebody who can say things from a third perspective and give you more credibility, and then getting reviews helps with that credibility because that's third-party endorsement.
Well, Julie, I think that, you know, you're doing a terrific job, and I want to, I almost never recommend publicity companies simply because I have heard too many tragic stories. But I like that you at least put prices on, because most of them don't even put prices, and you quoted $1,500 to $25,000. It gives an author an idea that that has to start somewhere. And
right.
I mean, it is important because when as you say, the predators do get to these authors, and I just hate it. I just hate it because it's not fair. They work so hard on their book, and they just need to get the right bunch of people behind their book and pushing their book. And so I think that you're doing a terrific job, and really thrilled with Chelsea. I get a kick out of her. That's the example. You have to look at the letter she wrote me. That's an example of what a publicist has to write, because it's an eye-catching letter. And and I hope that maybe you'll come on again, and we'll go over run through the frequently asked questions that you have on your website.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. I would love to. I love what you're doing and that you're educating authors. That's so important. That's a great service you're providing.
Well, thank you for joining me today. And I'll be in touch, and I'll keep in touch with Chelsea, too. And I'll have you back on soon, okay?
Thank you so much. Okay, talk to you later.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye, Julie. Wow. She is a very nice woman. I really like her. And as I said, this website of hers is the best of all the publicity websites that I've been to. You really should check it out. And it's called JKS Communications. And the one page with the frequently asked questions will answer a lot of your questions. So check that out. And I am very happy that I have in the studio with me one of my favorite authors, Bonsu Brandvik, who is here, and we're going to be talking. Now, Bonsu, of course, is the author of the fantastic Bellevue Biltmore series, Spirits of Bellevue Biltmore, and I'm so happy to welcome you here, Bonsu.
Well, thank you.
Okay, great. Let's get that microphone in place.
All right.
Been a busy day today for me. How are you doing?
I've been just doing fine.
Okay.
I appreciate you having me back on.
Oh, well, I'm always happy to have you on because I love your books. I think they are so much fun, and I love your webpage. Bonsu, okay. For anybody anybody in our area, and all of you snowbirds and all of you people all around the country who come to Florida, of course, you've probably heard of the Bellevue Biltmore. It was the most beautiful hotel. The largest wooden structure, right?
It was 820,000 square feet.
Wow.
And so arguably the largest wooden structure in the United States and perhaps the world. So unfortunately, they have demolished all but 36,000 square feet of the hotel at this point in time. The small remainder is just like the original lobby and a few rooms above it, and they'll be incorporating that into a 33-room inn. They've moved the 36,000-foot structure, which was quite an ordeal just by itself, but they've moved that tiny bit that they've saved to the edge of the property.
And it was built in?
It opened in January of 1897.
January 1897.
They took about 18 months to build it in the middle of nowhere with, you know, plows and, you know, mule-pulled wagons and axes, and, you know, cleared out the area and built that structure out of the southern lolly pine tree.
It makes me crazy to think that my grandfather, when he came through Ellis Island, they gave him the choice to go to northern Michigan or to St. Petersburg, Florida. And he didn't want anything to do with Russians. So he's, no, St. Petersburg. So he came from Finland, and he decided to go to northern Michigan, where the weather is the same as back home. Well, we still have that 40 acres over there. Unfortunately, it has not gone up in value. Can you imagine if he had come here?
Right.
Boy, back in 1897, there was nothing here, really nothing.
Yeah, well, that's what the whole purpose of Henry B. Plant building the Bellevue Biltmore was, to bring the rich people here, because he realized that, you know, he was a transportation guy, so he built the railroad here right to the doors of his hotel. And by being able to bring the wealthy people to such an extravagant resort, he was able to bring them. He had a huge influence on the growth of the area by building that hotel where he did.
Okay, well, we're going to talk more about your books when we come back. We're going to have one commercial here from Mike Lindell, right? Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. I have a guest in the studio, Bonsu Brandvik, and I'm going to be talking to her in a little while about her wonderful books. But first, I'm going to talk to somebody. It's a very perfect time to talk to him. It's going to be Earth Day on Saturday, April 22nd, and so we're going to be talking about 100 Plants to Feed Bees with Matthew Shepard, and I'm just waiting for him to get on the line. This is a really fascinating book, beautifully done. Absolutely beautifully done. And I'm looking at Big Ed in the control room, and I hope that he's going to be on in a few minutes, because I'm interested in this book. The wonderful thing about this program is that I can have any kind of book on that I want. So I can have exactly wonderful paranormal mysteries like Bonsu's, and I can have children's books. I love children's books. And I just had David Baldacci on, who wrote a wonderful book for young adults, fantasy. So I'm always looking for different type of books that will inspire you, and sometimes reference books that you can use when you are writing. So I'm going to be talking right now to, right? Do we have Matthew on? Hi, Matthew.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Fine. Okay, Matthew. I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper, so that we can talk about 100 Plants to Feed the Bees. It's a beautiful book.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so tell me, Of course, Earth Day is going to be on Saturday, and this book comes out just in time for people to start thinking about how they can help the bees. So what do you recommend?
Well, I mean, there's lots of things you can do to help bees, but one of the simplest and most straightforward is just to make sure that they have flowers that they can feed on, because they need the flowers to feed themselves as the adults, but also they collect the nectar and the pollen and take it back to their nest to support their offspring. And so this really is a really fundamental thing and that can help bees everywhere. And it's something that anybody can do.
Well, I recognize their British accent, right?
That's right, yep.
Okay, well, I lived in England for many years in Sonning, near Henley-on-Thames. Uh-huh. And I had wonderful garden.
I learned gardening from my mother. I didn't enjoy it much to start with because I was picking up the weed piles that she left behind, but it was sort of some pocket money for me. But that, yeah, I learned gardening as an English country garden, and that's what I carry forward, that abundance of bloom or that mass of flowers and life. And that's what I always try and bring into the garden, and I hope that's what this book will allow other people to do.
Well, one of the wonderful things about living in England are the gardens, because in our little village there in Sonning, everybody had a garden, and it was just so lovely, and we would have every spring there would be really literally garden parties, and it was wonderful. So I learned a lot about flowers while I was living in England. Now, lately there was this little mini disaster here with General Mills giving the wrong kind of flowers, right?
Yes and no. I mean, it wasn't a real disaster. The flowers could all help bees. I mean, every one of those produced nectar and pollen and supported a lot of bees. But just they weren't necessarily native to the whole area. But they also were never intended for scattering around in the wild. I mean, they were intended for people to put in their garden. And in a garden, you can get away with having non-native plants. I mean, heavens, you talk about English gardens and the ones that I grew up in. I mean, English lavender is kind of an essential component in English gardens, but it's not an English plant. You know, it comes from the Mediterranean. So there are lots of plants you can grow successfully in a garden that will do great things for bees. And the other thing about this General Mills, the Cheerio promotion at CPAC, there's been a massive debate about what's good for bees and what people can do for bees. And so it may not have been the outcome that was intended, but they have really pushed forward awareness of bees and conservation and simple things you can do in your garden to help bees.
Well, bees play such a very integral part of really my favorite book of the year, A Gentleman in Moscow. I don't know if you've read it yet. It's a fantastic book because
I haven't read it.
As somebody interested in bees, you have to read A Gentleman in Moscow, because then you will discover why bees are so important. And I know that all of the ladies that I've talked to who have read this book have a new appreciation for bees. So it's funny one book can change people's ideas and open their eyes.
Yeah, no, I think everybody can look back to a book that changed the way they viewed things.
And I think when as a bee expert, you have to read A Gentleman in Moscow, and you'll be thrilled with the discussion of bees in that book. It's unexpected. We're talking about Russia, and we're talking about all sorts of other things, but the bees actually are so integral to that book. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the bees are integral to our life, so we shouldn't be too surprised that someone finally brought them into a book like that. So.
What do you think are the best plants here? Now, I'm in, of course, Florida. We're surrounded with shrubs and flowers. But what do you think for if people want to just have plants and flowers in their backyard? What are the very best ones?
There's a small number of really amazing plants that people will can grow, and some of them are just things like the simple, straightforward ones like asters and bee balm and blazing star, ironweed, even saw palmetto that a lot of people don't realize is a good plant for bees, but when it flowers, it has this massive flower head on it that will support all sorts of bees. And so there's something that will be suited to any location, any size plot. So it doesn't matter if you've got, you know, an acre of suburbia to look after, or you'll just have some planters on the deck of your condo. There's going to be something that will be suited to that space and something that you can do to help bees.
Well, one of my favorite is sunflowers. I even as a child, I always wanted to grow sunflowers. I just love sunflowers. So I think that's a good one, right?
Yes, definitely. No, another good one. In fact, my daughter, when she was starting kindergarten, she was given a sunflower seed to plant, and she knew that when that had grown up and the flowers on it, she knew it would be time to start school. And it was an amazing thing, and so it also supported a bunch of bees, which was the secondary benefit for me.
Well, I want to thank you so much, you know, for bringing this book to my attention. As I said, it's a great time because it is Earth Day. It's a beautiful book, and mm-hmm. you are the editor and promoter for this book, and it's just fantastic. It's beautiful pictures, and I recommend it to all authors. Now that I realize how important bees were to A Gentleman in Moscow, I think that many authors can use ideas from this book and certainly learn plants, because it is wonderful to be able to know the name of flowers and bushes and plants when you are writing a book. So for all you authors out there, I think this book called 100 Plants to Feed the Bees, Provide a Healthy Habitat to Help Pollinators Thrive, is a great investment, because it's just beautiful. I keep going through it. For the past month since I got it, I just thumbed through it and look at the pictures. They're beautiful.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. We wanted it to be attractive and accessible, so there is a lot of good information in there. But if people are overwhelmed, then they're not going to bother reading it. So.
No,
I'm very happy to hear how much you've been enjoying it.
Oh, it is. It's delightful. You have little stories there. You talk about the plants. The pictures are lovely. And as I said, as a reference book for a writer, they can't get better than this. And, of course, as a gift for anyone, at this time of the year, it's a wonderful gift. So I just want to encourage everyone to go out and get this book. It's available, and it's from the Xerces Society, right? Published
yep,
it.
That's right. That's
and I think.
I can say it's Story Publishing who actually produced it with us, but you should be able to get it anywhere, bookstores, online, and also from the Xerces Society website, where you'll find a ton of other information.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Matthew. And I will encourage people to get this book. I'll put it on my website also, because I think it's one of the loveliest books that we can keep just next to us when we're writing, and it's always interesting to throw in the name of a flower or a bee into a story. So I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Bye for now. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that's nice. It is. Isn't it beautiful, Bansu?
Yeah,
have you looked at
really
it?
I was seeing that, and I was thinking that because I have gardens in my backyard specifically to attract bees and make sure that I don't put insecticides on anything. And I don't have very good tomatoes, but I've got beautiful flowers.
Okay, well, that's that's important. But it is true that when you do flowers for bees, don't put insecticides on them, please. Don't. My brother is an organic gardener, and for many years he kept bees. But he hasn't been doing it the past few years because when you have bees, you can't travel. You're sort of stuck taking care of the bees at certain times of the year. And
So
he was doing too much traveling there. He had to stop it, but he loved it. And have you read A Gentleman in Moscow yet?
I have not, but I'm intrigued after what you had
you
said.
You have to read it. It is a fantastic book. And they're having a dinner at the Indian Shores Library. And it is called A Gentleman in Moscow Dinner. And it is fantastic, and you can go and look at their website, Indian Shores, and I think you still have time to sign up for it. It's going to be lots of fun. There's going to be caviar and vodka, and everybody there has read A Gentleman in Moscow, which, of course, I have reviewed several times on this show because I love the book. So how are you doing with your books? Tell us, you've written a trilogy.
It's actually going to be a series of four books when it's finished. And so the first two books are out in the series, and I'm currently, I guess, about two-thirds of the way done with the third book in the series. And it's an interesting series. Unlike most book series, it doesn't star the same protagonist.
And because it jumps years.
It jumps everything. There's only one character that remains through the entire books, and that's a Victorian spirit of Margaret Plant, is the only character that goes through the series. I guess the main character of the series is the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, because that's where it takes place.
She is a star. That's a star.
Yeah.
Hotel. And, of course, you have just kept such wonderful photos of this hotel, on your website.
I have tried, and now that, you know, the hotel has been down, I think that I probably have the largest collection of photos of the hotel, and I'm still collecting, and people will still send me very generously their pictures that I can use on my website. And I try and keep it all free. Anybody can download any pictures they see on my site and use them for whatever.
Well, that's very generous of you, because a lot of people are charging. You can't use any photos anymore. You have to be really careful. And if you use a photo from a website, if you use photos from other people's websites and put it on your website, check with Larson & Larson. They're my intellectual property lawyers, mm-hmm. and they should be yours, because otherwise you can get in trouble.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to get this blogger on to talk about her problems with taking photos from a website. She was doing it. She was one of the earliest bloggers when internet first started. I mean, she's been blogging for 10 years, which is a long time. Mm-hmm. Her first blogs were, you know, very minimal, and then they got better and they got better. And all through those years, she used photos, right? I mean, innocently, she didn't think about, you know, she saw nice photos.
About property rights,
And she put them on. She spent 9 months going back through all of her blogs and taking every photo off.
It is interesting that, especially when you're a blogger or a writer, you worry about your own property rights and, you know, the idea that somebody might steal them or anything. But often people don't consider the rights of the photographer or the owner of an antique photo. So I always say it's very important, and I always put out on everything, use the photos. It's not a problem. So if anybody ever used a photo, I would not have an issue with it. But other people are obviously, you know, they want to be paid for their work. And being an artist myself, I can certainly understand and respect that. So to me, it's always, as your property intellectual attorney would say, you know, it's like always, you know, make sure that you have the copyright authority to not only use the picture, but use it in the manner that you're going to. Some people won't mind if you put a picture inside a book with photo credit, but if you're going to use that as part of your cover for your book, that's a whole nother ball game there.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It is really
important. I think that's very generous of you. It is a wonderful website. I mean, you could spend an hour just looking at the photos and sort of dreaming about, you know, what it was like. And of course, I think when finally Hollywood discovers you and they do some movies based on your books, the designers, set designers, are going to have to go
use
back
the hotel. Yeah.
And because
it is a shame that it's gone. And part of my objective with this series is to record all the history of the hotel. Of course, they are fiction. And it's always interesting to me, because when I started writing the books, it wasn't to be about spirits, which in my world that I've created for my books, spirits and ghosts are not the same thing. A spirit is missing only its physical body. It has all of its memories. It has all of its characteristics. It can materialize, and it can visit people in their dreams. where a ghost is just a fragment of a spirit that broke off as the rest of the spirit went on into the light. And so generally that's why the spirits are often evil portrayed in yoga, because they're frankly, usually it's the evil part of the spirit that broke off, and now it's not a whole being. All it is evil energy. And so, you know, in my world, you know, those things are very separate. But when I started writing the books, it was just so that I could tell the history of the hotel. And I thought when the person goes to sleep, spirits take them back in time and they relive the history of the hotel, as well as learning lessons from past generations. But it turned out that all kinds of people wrote me about actual spirits and or ghosts that they've seen there. And so I for a long time started doing a presentation called The 20 Real Ghosts of the Bellevue Biltmore. And in my last book and my current book, and actually even my future book, I incorporate some of the real ghost stories into my writing.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know you're available to give speeches about
Bellevue Biltmore. I do presentations. I mostly keep myself busy. I have run for the last 7.5 years a writer's critique group that now has well over 400 members called Clearwater Writers.
I will tell everyone, Bansu has the best, the best critique group.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure, because I know that I have helped several authors to come and take their products to the end and get them actually, you know, produced. Some others have finished products and they're seeking a representation through the traditional means, and others have self-published. But it's very satisfying to have helped other authors. And, of course, they help me improve my writing on a very regular basis.
Well, I know that the reputation of your writers group is the best. Everyone who has attended is so impressed with how you handle it, and how very useful and helpful the process has become for them.
Yeah, it's been very satisfying. Yeah, the feedback and everything, and of course it's always great to get a signed book by an author who says, thanks for helping me make this happen, you know, and it's very touching, and now my collection is growing with books, so that's nice.
That's wonderful.
And then I also encourage everybody to write, and a lot of different critique groups take different angles on how they critique, and some are more into the proofreading and grammar and all that, and mine is not set up that way. For me, it's like, get the story on paper. You can always edit a page, but you can't edit a blank page. So it's always get the words down on paper, and then we'll worry about all the fixing
of
what you've written.
Let it flow. Just take that joy of writing and of telling the story that you want to tell, and just get it out there. And then, as Bansu says, then you can go back. But don't sort of harness yourself and nitpick it in the beginning, because it's important to get that story out there.
Yeah, and because my books are they're cross-genre, which I used to struggle with the idea of how should you put your book. And my books are primarily women's fiction, because in each book, someone checks into the hotel and undergoes a journey. They've got problems, and those problems will speak to different spirits. And so that's why they go back to different points in time, is because their issues, you know, different people or different spirits resonated with their stories.
Well, just tell us some of the famous people that are in your books that are mentioned, because
many people, anybody who was anybody back in the day stayed at the hotel. And I mean everything from the Vanderbilt family to the DuPonts, you know, all of those families stayed. And then we had, you know, Henry Ford and you know.
Thomas Edison?
Thomas Edison was a frequent visitor there. And so what I'll do is I'll incorporate just different, you know, little segments about them. Like maybe they were in St. Andrew's Pub in the basement and talked to one of my characters, you know, and everything, or encourage them. And then I'll put in, for instance, one character is talking to them about how impossible it is to, you know, do anything, you know, to produce work. You know, she's trying to write and do it because the jobs are so long. And then I have Henry Ford say, you know, people should have days off. And then, of course, we all know that Henry Ford wound up putting in
the six-day work week and then the five. That's one of the wonderful things about being a writer, that you can do that. You can bring these people to life.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And well, it's fun because it's like, I always say I play in the gray areas. It's like, you know, prove that he didn't get that idea from talking to somebody, you know, or whatever.
Exactly.
And so sometimes it becomes just, you know, fun to fill in the gaps of history and say, well, this is a plausible way that this might have happened. And always my woman in the present is undergoing problems, and she will learn from her elders, so to speak, in past generations, how to resolve her problems today. Because I'm a big believer in learning from the things that people went through before, and I don't think we do enough of that anymore.
Well, I think we can learn a lot from Bonsu's books. They are available. You can go to her website. It's Bonsu, what is it?
BonsuBranvik.com. They're also available, of course, you know, electronically at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and they're available in print, ebook, and audiobook.
Okay, and the names are Ripples and?
Pearls. Yeah, Pearls is the first book. Ripples is the second. And all of them are, if you remember, just type in Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore. Actually, if you just type in Bonsu,
exactly.
I have an unusual enough name.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, there aren't very many Bonsus in this world.
No. So I always tell people it's either me or African drum music. That's the only thing you're going to find when you type that into the Google search.
Well, that's wonderful. And I want everyone to just go and get Bonsu's books, because you will enjoy it. A fantastic read and perfect time. The weather is fantastic here. For anyone in the area, go to the botanical gardens. Here we have in Largo the most wonderful botanical gardens. And talk about bees and butterflies. It's amazing. And every weekend there they have a wedding. And it's so beautiful to be walking around the botanical gardens. And then you can peek in at the weddings. And they have sometimes like two or three in a row. And so you're bound to see these lovely, lovely brides.
And next door to the botanical gardens is Heritage Village.
Yes.
Which is a collection of homes and businesses that they have actually transported to the area and rebuilt, so that you're in a village in Florida with actual buildings that have been restored to be everything from the local grocery store and barbershop and, you know, a telephone switchboard to, you know, homes that they've restored, and it's incredible as well.
Again, a great thing for writers, just to put you in the mood, to get you back in time. And Bonsu's books will do that too. And so I hope that everyone will go and pick up one of her books and go to the website. You just lose yourself in these photos. I want to thank you so much for being on today. Bonsu, it's been wonderful, and I hope that everyone will read a good book this weekend and just have fun. Say something nice to somebody, and I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good to me. And thank you, Ed, and thank you all. And remember, my name is Patsy with a Z, P-A-T-Z-I. That's the only promo code you need to buy a MyPillow. Just go to MyPillow.com. And support Joy on Paper, because I like to support not just the best-selling authors, but all of the local and indie authors that I can get on my program. So please go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATZI. Bye.